Picking up with the Egyptians pursuing the Bnei Yisrael who escaped, we're told that Paro, right, had told his people, we need to form an army, we got to chase the Jews and bring them back. And we're told that the people were reluctant. They all had someone in the family who had died in Makos Bechoros, and they really were not all that keen on having people who could cause God to kill people. So Paro said, okay, I'll make a deal with you guys. I am not going to ride at the back where I'm protected by legions, but I will lead. And I'm going to do this, he said, as a leader leading people, because I am not just fighting the Jews, I'm going to defeat their God. I got to beat him, and the only way to do it is to stand up in front of him and take him out. And he said, I'm even going to give you guys the booty. I'll give you at least 50%. And I'm going to pay you. I will open up my treasuries, giving out gold, silver, and other precious jewels. Paro did something that Avram Avinu had done and others. He personally harnessed his horse. He said, if it's king of Egypt versus king of the Jews, it's for me to show a measure of respect or whatever. And God said, because of that, I, Baruch Hu, you dropped your hat. I partially, Akadosh Baruch Hu, will be the one to punish you, Paro. Paro chose 600 of the best quality chariots in Egypt, and he had others, and he had experienced generals, captains, majors, whatever ranks they had, and they took off over after the Jews. It was the Kadosh Baruch Hu's plan that the entire Egyptian army would drown in the sea. And that's why he let Paro amass this vast army. And we got a question. We know that during the Makos of Dever and Hail, animals, their flocks, were decimated. If that's the case, where did Paro get these horses from? Presumably, the livestock had been decimated. And it says, you know what it was? It was those previously so-called God-fearing Jews who listened to Moshe and stabled their animals during hail, that now said, okay, take them, Paro. We still want to see you defeat these people. Paro's army moved fast. In one day, they covered the distance that the Jews had taken 3 days to reach. And Hashem gave them, as we say, Godspeed, and they moved along. And they were chasing, screaming, blaspheming God. This was one great army hell-bent on killing Jews. And we're told by the Medrash, somehow, all of the soldiers got into this realm of anti-Semitism. We're going to rob, kill, plunder, rape Jews. Ah, what a party. And Paro said, we're going to do something else. We're going to utterly destroy them. I don't want one Jew left. He was going to be the successful executor of every Jew. Jewish people beheld Paro coming, right? And somehow they had a vision of the Sar Shel Esav, the angel, guardian angel of Esav, somewhat being above their camp. It seemed that Egyptians were getting divine help from somewhere so that they could rout the Jews. The question is, why did the Jews need to be rioted to this extent? It says, when the Jews first started marching and they realized that they were in peril in some ways, they cried to Hashem. Once they had a couple days of freedom, it seems, the fervor in their prayers to Hashem sort of waned, which is probably human nature. I don't know that people can stay at the highest plane of spirituality at all times. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu somehow wanted to hear again the same davening, the same level of commitment, so that the Jews would pray to be saved from Mitzrayim. Dasan and Aviram, the great ones, and rabble-rousers with them said to Moshe, you son of a gun, we told you, don't take us out. We're sorry we didn't die with the other 80% of the Jews during darkness. He said, at least then we might have been buried. Now we're going to be eaten by the animals, right? In the field. It says the other group were those who were tzaddikim and they had complete emuna in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And they were steadfast. They did not feel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had taken them out to be destroyed here. He says, the weaker people broke up into four groups. Reuven, Shimon, and Yisachar's weak people were in panic, and they said, let's drown ourselves in the seas. Mass suicide. Moshe said, do not fear. Stick around. Stand here. Hashem's going to save you. Those who were weak in Zvulun, Binyamin, Naphtali said, let's surrender and let's do the best deal we can. And Moshe said to them, you will never ever go back to Egypt as slaves. Yehuda and Yosef said, let us go out in battle. The two Bechor families, one from Leah, one from Rachel, the two leaders, we're going to go battle. We're going to fight in honor of Hashem. And Moshe said to them, yes, it's a great idea, but Hashem yelochem lochem v'atem takarishun. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's command is, the Rabbeinu Shleilam alone is going to be the sole warrior. Your job is to stand by in awe and be quiet. The last tribe, Dan, Gad, and Asher, said, let's take evasive tactics. Let's try to confuse them. Let's lead them into an ambush or whatever. And they too were told, stay here. Moshe told the Jewish people, your job is to stay here, to see what's going to happen, to develop emunah in the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, and watch the great salvation that's going to occur. And it says, Moshe was given the ability by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to say few words, and yet, with the way he said them and the conviction, the Jews believed him. They were assured that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, in fact, about to do miracles and take revenge against Mizraim. Nonetheless, as human beings are, they were impatient. And they said to Moshe, we understand, but human nature, I guess, is tzitzitzer, to worry. And they said, when will this amazing miracle take place? And Moshe said, today. They said, more or less, could you hurry it along, because we're suffering. Presumably, their kids were worried, their wives were worried, etc. Moshe, it says, began to daven, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it says, opened the heavens, and they saw the masses with Ruach HaKodesh, armies and armies of Melochim, ready to battle the Mitzrim. Moshe was going to continue with additional tefillos, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, please, Moshe, stop. Now is the time for action, not for prayers. Because my son's tefillos have already been received by me in Shemayim and have been accepted. Tell Bnei Yisrael they have a mitzvah. The mitzvah is to go forward into the sea, and I will do miracles for them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, the reason, the merit of splitting the sea is for a number of reasons. The Jewish people, right, turned back when I told them to, and didn't say, we're going to devastate everybody by moving back to Mitzrayim. Our wives and kids will be demoralized. They will say in future that Kelevi Anvehu, this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, my personal Hashem, and I will glorify him. There is Avram, who split the firewood for Akedas Yitzchak. I promised Yaakov Avinu, Uforatzta Yama, which can be translated, not that you will multiply in a direction, but, and you will burst the sea. The sea will retreat when it sees the Aroin Shel Yosef HaTzadik, the Aroin. The same way he ran from Potiphar's wife, the sea will run from his presence. HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded Moshe to stretch his hand out over the sea. A powerful east wind began to blow. Bnei Yisrael traveled all night, coming closer and closer to the banks, to the shore. The Egyptians kept going after them, but they couldn't reach them. They began shooting arrows and missiles, but the cloud of HaKadosh Baruch Hu took them all out. The cloud, which was usually in front of them by day, because they had the pillar of fire by night, now became the impregnable Iron Dome, so to speak, but was 100% plus successful. Moreover, they perceived Malachim, a special angel of the Ribbono Shel Olam, behind them, protecting them. The cloud also brought Choshech, the same type of darkness that had existed only 6 days in Makos Choshech in Mitzrayim, now was going to appear for the seventh day to complete the week. The Egyptians in the darkness traveled on. They continued to curse and blaspheme, and they tried to shoot missiles, arrows, etc. And then they had a vision. They saw somehow the Jewish camp being illuminated by a Kodesh Baruch Hu's pillar of fire, and they saw Klal Yisroel davening and praising a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and then having a Suda, eating and drinking, like a Sudas Mitzvah. When the Yidden got to the seashore, mighty waves came before them, but they were determined. They were not going to be dissuaded by this. And now the question became, and they all began, it says, to quarrel, who goes first? Whose Nasi is the first one to go into the sea? And we're told, we know the famous story, that Nachshon ben Aminadav, the Nasi of Yehuda, jumped in, and until he got to water that was neck high, the sea only then split. Once Nachshon ben Aminadav went in, it says, Shevet Levi jumped in before the rest of Shevet Yehuda. And it says Yehuda's Shevet was a little upset, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I know that both Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Levi were only going into the sea because of their devotion to the Ribbono Shel Olam, right? Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Binyamin is going to have the Beis HaMikdash built in his vicinity in Eretz Yisrael, and Shevet Yehuda will be forever the Melech Yisrael. Klal Yisrael went into the...
Shevet Levi
that
wanted to jump in with
Bezalel
and Yehuda.
And what are those? No, did I say Levi? It was Binyamin. Okay. I made a mistake. You know, it's hard to tell one brother from another. I'm sorry. No, it was Shevet Binyamin. It wasn't Levi. I would imagine that, I don't know where, I mean, Shevet Levi, they were not yet, they had been the teachers in Mitzrayim. We know that Shevet Levi was never enslaved. But it says here, the two tribes that tried to be the first ones in were Binyamin and Yehuda, and that's why they had these great rewards. We know a number of things happened at Yom Suf. We know that the Jews said Oz Yashir, right after they crossed. We're told they crossed in 12 different lanes, each one tribe for each lane. We're told that they could see right through the water, which became ice-like, supposedly, but it was totally transparent, and they could see everyone else. We're also told that HaKadosh Baruch Hu dried out the sea, so it was easily journeyable on. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them water. If you wanted water, somehow you touched or you came near the wall and you got a cup of water. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu also, it says, brought them luscious fruit and things. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the crossing as palatable and as comfortable as it could be. The Egyptian army went after them. They entered into the heart of the sea. Hashem said to Moshe, stretch your arm a second time, and the water will then cover them. All of a sudden, the angel, the protective angel of Esav said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, mercy, mercy, spare them. Hashem said, okay, we're going to convene the 70 Sarim, the 70 protective angels in heaven. Presumably, I guess the Jewish one replaced the Egyptian one, so maybe they had 70, or maybe they had 69, right? And he asked them to judge. It says they They remembered the newborns being thrown into the water, and the angel of Esav says, "Yes, my people did this, but please." Could they not still, in some way, be saved? It says, the angel Michael motioned to Gavriel. It says he, and I don't know which one of the Malachim, it says, went to Egypt and came back with a brick that had a Jewish child cemented into it. And that was, as they say, the last straw, or the last brick. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wiped out all of the Egyptians who were guilty of all seven of the Averos that a Ben Noach is responsible for. Idolatry, immorality, which they were the height of, bloodshed, oppression, exploitation of people, blaspheming Hashem's name, conceit, slander. They didn't have proper judges. Once...
It says like the United Nations.
Yeah. Right. Another body that should quickly go to hell. The sea then waited for the last yid to get out, and it crashed, came down in full force. And as we say in Oz Yashir, there were various degrees of suffering experienced by the Egyptian soldiers. some more than others. They were treated in accordance with the degree of evil they had actually used to exploit the Jews. So the worst of them got buffeted around for a long time, up and down, back and forth, etc. It says the best of them sunk like stones and they drowned immediately. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the corpses of the Jew, the Egyptians, and put them, and had the sea spit them out and put them on the banks. And this was done to convince the Jewish people that they were gone and that they weren't somehow saved by going to another part of the sea. I don't know how big that sea was. But in any event, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Yidden demonstrable proof that they were gone. And there were now riches that they had with them. I guess maybe they had bejeweled chariots and there were others. And the sea would continue to basically exude precious stones and things, jewels, which the Jews could have.
That's why they didn't want to leave the sea.
Right, at the end, right. It says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu ensured that there were, amongst those cast onto the sea, some who were in the process of dying, so they could actually see Klal Yisroel standing there, strong and alive. As we said, the ones who may have had jewels, etc., floated to the surface, and their spoils were available. And it says, as they were dying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu let the Jewish people say to the Egyptians, you know why this happened? It's because of what you did. It's payback for the evil you perpetrated. Okay. We're going to stop here, and we'll pick up with some other things on the parsha tomorrow.